Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report yesterday called a special report on global warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius. Now, the report basically provides a summary of existing research, and it's looking at, well, what will the impact of warming by 1.5 degrees be? What will it do to our planet? And more importantly, what are the necessary steps we can take to actually try and limit global warming? Now, it's been a number of many reports and warnings that we've heard over the last number of years, but our individuals and our governments actually taking it seriously? Well, launching the report, Dr. Deborah Roberts, who's a co-chair of the IPCC Working Group on Climate Impact, said it's the largest clarion bell from the science community, and she hopes it mobilises people and dents the mood of complacency. I think lots of people would agree with that. Well, on the line to tell us more of leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan. Eamon, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, first of all, just give us a brief overview of the report and what it found. Did it find anything different that we don't already know?
The basic science hasn't changed. The understanding of climate change, it goes back 150 years, knowing that if you put carbon dioxide and other gases in the atmosphere, it traps the heat, and a warming world is going to threaten all our futures. I think what's different about this is, well, A, the science becoming more and more certain and the implications more and more clear, because they're starting to happen today. We've already seen a 1 degree increase in global average temperatures, and in certain parts of the world, the likes of the Arctic, that's actually been a 3 degrees increase, and it's having real effect, as we can see in our own country and elsewhere. What's different about this report, I suppose, is the precision around, okay, but what if it increased a further 0.5%, or what if it increased a further 1%? If we kept that global temperature increase just to 1.5%, what would the consequences be? And if it went up to 2%, what would the consequences be? And what it's saying in every different area of affecting our natural systems, 2 degrees actually now a very high risk of permanent damage to our natural systems, which will damage us in turn. And it's actually still, even beyond that, there's other risks that it doesn't go into, the risks that there may be some tipping points that we don't see, but that we go over, and actually that we couldn't stop it at 2 degrees, but it might increase to 3 degrees, which is where we're going at the moment, or 4 degrees. If we're in a 3 or 4 degree world, we're in a world where hundreds of millions of people's livelihood, their very living, is threatened. In a 2 degree world, what we're seeing, what the report was saying yesterday, is that we would lose something like 20%. Well, we'd lose all coral reefs. We might lose about 20% of insect life, of bird life. We would see real reduction in the ability to provide food for our people, provide fisheries. We would see a further increase in sea level rise, which threatens our cities, particularly cities like Dublin, is on a, you know, kind of a very low-lying coastal cities. We have real risks in that. So it is setting up the risk.
Like many of those risks you've talked about, is a lot of the damage already done, Eamon? I mean, are we too far gone in many ways?
It's never too late. Even if we go beyond this 1.5 degrees, even if we go beyond 2 degrees, it's still always better for us to try and minimise the damage that will be done. And some of the damage is inevitable now. So I don't believe it is ever too late. But what the report is saying with real, and this is the top scientists from all over the world, every single government representative saying that we have to act now, that the what's been happening for the last 20 or 30 years, where we knew about this science, we knew about the risks, but we didn't act on it, cannot continue. That if we don't act now, and at scale, and the scale of change, they say, is beyond any historical comparison, we have to take the fossil fuels out of our life in a single generation. That means a completely different transport system, a completely different energy system, a completely different agricultural and energy system.
Do you think that's realistically achievable?
I do, and I'll tell you why. Because I think actually it's a better society that would come out of it. I think, for example, if you look at transport, moving away from just reliance on the automobile, which is very individualized society, we're all cut off from each other. I heard Mary Robinson speaking yesterday morning in the saying, she said, we need to be more human. And I think, actually, if we move towards a transport system which is based on public transport, where there's that collective sense of being part of something, or which promotes walking and cycling, which is healthier for us, and which is also social in terms of the nature of a town or a city that it builds, it's a more human system, it's a more effective system, and a better system. And similarly in energy, if you look at that change, going from the current system, where all our money is spent on oil and gas from Russia and the Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, towards a system where we catch the sun, we tap into the wind, we develop biomass and our own resources. It belongs to everyone. It can happen everywhere. And that's not saying it, you know, in the Middle East and in Africa, they can also have it because the sun shines there even more than it does here.
But there doesn't seem to be aim in the political will to actually bring about these changes. I mean, Ireland, at the moment, we're not really living up very well to our commitments on reducing emissions.
No, I mean, the world is threatened in a number of ways. Donald Trump in America and his refusal to sign or be part of the Paris Agreement.
The Brazilian president has said the same, the newly elected president.
Indeed, and there's real risks in that. But it's hard for us to criticise anyone else when we ourselves are not actually taking action. And unfortunately, that's the case. Just to give you examples, I mean, okay, the budget today, the big story today is that the budget seems to have ignored climate change. This big warning call comes out yesterday, Gael ignored today. But even beyond that, there isn't a single public transport project being built at the moment in this state. We've 10 big road projects ongoing, but not one public transport project has been built out at the moment. There isn't a single cycleway project other than the development of the Royal Canal as a greenway route. There isn't a single cycleway project being built at the moment in this city. And we could turn the city into Copenhagen, in my mind. We could really envision...
On mentioning Copenhagen, is there any real leaders? We had a message in earlier from a listener saying, in spite of Donald Trump pulling out of the climate agreement, the US is one of the few countries that's actually managed to cut its emissions, whereas Germany, who obviously signed up to it and have talked about it a lot, haven't managed to cut their emissions.
No, it's true. And this isn't easy because then changing from one system to another is always difficult. And you're right, the person who texted in is right. Germany is stuck at the moment burning coal in the same way that we're burning peat, in a way that it's just not acceptable if this climate alarm is to be treated seriously. But I think the question for Ireland is, what do we want to do? And I think we can be leaders. I think Irish people do have respect and a love of nature and the environment around them and creation in all its majesty. And I think they want to be part of this change. I think it's a lack of leadership is holding us back.
Why are we not electing green politicians then?
Well, I hope they have elected some of us and I hope they'll elect more. It is our job is to present this argument and to try and win over the public attitude for this change. What we also have to do is work with other political parties. This has to be something... not just in the political cycle, it has to be a 20-30 year transition at scale that's beyond historic comparison. One of the ways you achieve that, or one of the ways we want to achieve it, is to work with other parties. It's not that, you know, this has to belong to everyone. It's not a niche, green, marginal issue. So that informs our politics. Yes, we're there to get elected and to represent and to deliver the change in the ground. We're also there to develop a form of politics which is not divisive, which is not dismissive of others, and to raise a story that actually this is something collectively we can do together. And that informs the way we do politics. I think it will come because I think people can see the climate changing in front of their eyes. We've seen, you know, the weather becoming more extreme in our own country. I think they'll also see and understand that the solutions moving towards this more efficient, cleaner, less polluting system is good, not just for the environment, but good for our health, good for our economy, and good for us in the sense of giving us a story about ourselves that we can really believe in, that pulls us together and unites us, that builds community. That's not just the story that tends to be out there at the moment in the political system, which is one of divisiveness, derision, and kind of doing down the other person. I think the time is right for that sort of bigger story, and that's part of our job, to explain why tackling climate delivers that, not just for the environment, but also for us as people, as human beings.
Eamon Ryan, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. Leader of the Green Party there, just talking to us about that latest report from the IPCC on climate change.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.